From our 901 Mission Street studios, you are listening to the San Francisco Chronicle.
Welcome to the Datebook Podcast. I'm San Francisco Chronicle pop culture critic Peter Hartlob, here with Chronicle movie critic Mick LaSalle. Welcome, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, welcome back from Venice. I always know you're in Venice because I get like really great movies. Like I get like Arrival. I got It Chapter 2 this year.
I've been doing panels at Venice on and off since 2006, but I don't go every year because a lot of times, I mean, It's a little bit like a busman's holiday, you know, and so it, I find myself, I go on vacation and then I go to Venice and next thing I know, I'm rushing to see movies and I start feeling like, hey, I could do this at home, you know?
It seems like you see more movies in Venice than when you're here sometimes.
Well, in a way, yeah, that is true. Although I also, the other thing that makes me kind of unsuited to film festivals in a way, although I do like going there, is that there's some people, they're able to sit down and watch four movies in a row. Some of them can do five in a row. And I can't do it. I'd say three would be really pushing it. And most days, just two. Not only that, but after three, I don't like anything. I start thinking that the movie's bad, and then it's not. It's just because it's just too much. So anyway, yeah. So I've been doing it since on and off since 2006. I probably do it about 2/3 of the time.
Yeah. Well, we're very happy to have you back. I would have loved to hear your take on Rambo 4. I had to jump on that grenade for you.
I would have loved to see that, actually. I would have liked writing that one.
I would have loved your review. Liba Hertz returns as well. Welcome back to Liba. And you guys are going to talk about Judy, the Joker. You got a lot of good stuff this time. A little bit about the Oscars. I want to warn there are some light spoilers, and maybe heavy spoilers, for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but hopefully people have seen it by now.
I hope so, yeah. Yeah. So if you hear us, you know, just cover your ears for a bit.
Datebook Podcast, thanks for listening.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Mick LaSalle, and welcome to Movies with Mick LaSalle. And I am here with my editor, Liba Hertz. Today, we are going to be talking about a number of movies. We're back from vacation, Liba.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about Joker. We're going to be talking about Judy, some other movies. And we're also going to be talking a little bit about one of the things, well, I did on my vacation. It's not really like vacation because I am working that part of it.
What did you do on vacation?
Well, I was at the Venice Film Festival for a bit, and so I saw some. Yeah, and I saw some good things. I didn't see anything, you know. Last year, to just talk a little bit about last year, I was at the festival and I saw two things I just fell in love with. I mean, it was just amazing. I saw A Star Is Born, which I didn't think was the greatest movie in the world, but I loved it. I just loved it. And it came at the end of a, it was also at the end of a magical night. That's part of it. I was having dinner. We had a walk. My friend's just like amazing as far as like finding places in Venice. Because you know how you're walking in Venice, you can't find anything.
And if you're by yourself, it's the most horrible experience.
Especially in St. Mark's and St. Paulo. There's some parts of Venice that are a little bit easier.
But if you get lost by yourself, it's the most horrible experience.
It's pretty.
If you get lost with friends, it's actually fun.
It's part of the thing. But we didn't have any time. We had to get to the movie. We had tickets, but now we had to make our way back to the movie. And as we're walking, it suddenly is a complete total downpour just out of nowhere. And so we just get there. Amazingly, Venice, what happens is as soon as it starts raining, guys show up on every street corner selling umbrellas, like everywhere for €5. They don't even try to really, you know, soak you for it. And so we went to the theater, and, you know, it's like just got there 2 minutes before it starts, the movie starts, and it was just wonderful, especially the beginning of it. And then
part,
I saw
Part Deux has its issues.
Part Deux does have its issues, and then a few days later, I saw Vox Lux, and that was amazing. So there was nothing like that kind of experience for this one. The movies were, you know, I said things were pretty good, very good, but I guess the most notable one is
Joker.
Joker.
Surprisingly, because it's a Marvel movie, and but instead it's getting like this critical response rather than this like, you know, and it's not only going to blow off up at the box office, I'd be shocked if he's not nominated for an Oscar. And I haven't even seen the movie.
Oh, you haven't seen it? Okay. No. Well, I've seen it, and I'd be surprised if he wasn't nominated for an Oscar, too. This was a weird experience seeing the movie, because I saw this movie not under the usual circumstances. I saw it in the same theater that I saw. This is a theater that's in St. Mark's. It's not part of the Venice Film Festival, but they do this theater, because I was staying in St. Mark's. One of the things that they do, actually Costello, which is above St. Mark's.
Can I just say something about St. Mark's really quick? To explain St. Mark's is you have to see Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, because there's a big scene that takes place in St. Mark's Square in Venice. So if you remember that scene where he actually pops up and says, "Ah, Venice, that's St. Mark's Square."
Okay, and it's also, and if you've seen Bloom and Love, that's another one, and St. Mark's. Well, I wasn't staying, you know, St. Mark's Square, I don't want to be near there. I wasn't staying in Costello, which is kind of a neighborhood. But the theater is in St. Mark's, and I you know, walk there. And so I saw Joker with a mostly European audience, because most Americans, they don't go to the movies when they're in Venice. They don't even think about it. And it's a weird movie to see in a nice, peaceful, beautiful old place, because it looks like every bit of American neurosis and paranoia just opened for the world to look at. And I have to say to the credit of Joaquin Phoenix, who I wasn't particularly looking forward to seeing in this role, because I thought it was going to be all shtick. Well, it is kind of, it's not shtick, but it's a very idiosyncratic performance, but he's terrifying. I mean, he really is. He is the dangerous maniac out of Nightmare. And I'd have to say the scariest maniac I've seen in a movie in many years. Maybe, I mean, he's right up there with like Anthony Perkins or something in Psycho. I mean, he's just scary, because he looks like he's unreachable, you know, and it's just nuts. I think the movie, when I saw it, I said, really, you know, they got to make this thing? Really? This is, I mean, it's a good movie. It's a very good movie. Not great. There's some doldrums in there, because in a movie like this, it's hard to have a second act. I mean, you establish a guy's a complete maniac, and then you know how it ends. The middle is just about a matter of filling out stuff. And some of it feels like filler, and some of it doesn't. But, you know, we know the last time there was a Joker movie and what happened. And this movie really is all about, you know, kind of a loner and a... a guy who just fits the pattern of some kind of mass murderer. And it's just, I just think, this is not a movie that the world needed, but I can't say that it's not good, because it is. It's actually very good.
I'm just wondering about whether you agree or disagree with, there's a bunch of protests going on, especially out of Aurora. That's where the horrible shooting occurred, where the killer was inspired by the last Joker movie, and they're protesting the release of this movie. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I think that Todd Phillips has the right to make any movie he wants, but people also have a right to react to that movie in any way they want. The First Amendment extends to the people in Aurora as well. I heard from my mother told me that she heard on the news that in movie theaters in New York, at every movie theater that this movie's showing, there's going to be a cop there. I don't know if it's going to be a plainclothes cop or a uniform cop. So this is, you know, people are taking this seriously. I sympathize with that point of view, because while I absolutely has the right to make any movie he wants, he's going to make a lot of money. I can't help but look at this movie as a cynically made product. I mean, you don't sit around and say, I'm going to make a movie about the Joker, because it's a story that you absolutely need to tell and that you've been wanting to tell your whole life. This is just a commercial effort that's done better than most. So, you know, I sympathize with the people in Aurora. Absolutely. Sympathize with them. Yeah.
It's really interesting, because it looks like the Academy Awards, if I was going to guess today, which I'm going to guess today, obviously.
Yes,
I would say the competition is going to be between the Joker and Mr. Rogers, in which Tom Hanks is actually playing Mr. Rogers and already getting early buzz of Oscar nomination as well.
Well, I haven't seen Mr. Rogers. I mean, it's kind of funny because they're both, in a way, both movies are in response to the same thing. They're in response to an idea that there's something really wrong going on here at this world. And so as a result, you do a movie about how there's something really wrong going on here, or you make a movie about Mr. Rogers because Mr. Rogers makes everybody feel good. And I don't know which way the Academy is going to go. And of course, there are other choices. Do you know, like, what's coming out that you think might be Adam Driver, maybe in the report? Or?
That's one. I think there's also, believe it or not the Bond movie, but there's a movie with Daniel Craig that got rave reviews. You remember what it's called? I think it's a robbery movie.
Yeah.
And so maybe Daniel Craig.
Well,
And also, yeah. I mean, you can't deny Once Upon a Time in America.
Oh, that would be one.
But who gets the best actor? And I think it's Joaquin Phoenix. Has got to be, what I'm reading, it's got to be the odds-on favorite right now.
Okay. I would say that the star of the movie is Brad Pitt.
I think they're better off putting up for supporting, and I think he would win supporting.
He would win supporting for sure, but I don't think he is supporting. I mean, he is in the subordinate position of those two guys. But if you look at it, he has the best sequence in the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
That whole thing where he goes to the Manson family compound is one of the best scenes, extended scenes in any movie in 2019. Yeah. He also is the one that confronts the Manson family in the climax, or actually they stumble upon him, but he fights the Manson family off more than that, you know, although there is the blowtorch incident involving Leonardo DiCaprio, which I think is the most hilarious thing in a movie this year. I really do. I think it's the most pure, and for pure absolute delight and making people happy, to bring happiness to the world, that blowtorch just is absolutely just the most wonderful thing.
I also found the ending so depressing, only because
it's supposed to be.
No, it is. Yeah. I mean, nobody plays white trash better than Brad Pitt in a Quentin Tarantino movie.
He's really, yeah.
I don't know if it's Tarantino or it's just Brad Pitt can just pick it up in those, but I usually go see him. I mean, the movie Ad Astra, I just wanted to say, get him off the screen. But this movie, you just like mesmerized by his performance. And even DiCaprio, who you know I'm not a big fan of, was actually terrific.
No, he was terrific. No, I'd say that they're going to position Brad Pitt for best actor. And this is why. First of all, I think, even though I think it's both of them, they're going to have to decide unless they want them both to lose, like Dustin Hoffman and John Voight for, you know, whatever
Midnight
that was.
Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah, Midnight Cowboy. So you have to choose between the two of them. So who are you going to choose? You're going to position DiCaprio, who just won a few years ago for Revenant, who can't win because he can't win because he just won for Revenant, or are you going to position Brad Pitt? I think they're going to go with Brad Pitt.
But I think if you put Brad Pitt, he's not going to win.
Well,
I mean, right off the bat, you got Phoenix and Hanks.
Okay.
Right off there.
I don't think it'll be Hanks. If it's Phoenix versus Hanks, and I haven't seen Hanks yet. I think Phoenix is going to win just because he has a lot of the things going for him. He's playing, you know, it's a chameleonic performance. He is, I think he's in his 40s still, maybe his early 50s, but it's prime age for winning. He has never won before. Yeah. That'll help. He's been nominated before, or has he? Has he ever been nominated
Phoenix,
for best?
I think he has been.
Yeah.
I think for supporting.
Well, supporting.
What was that, The Master, I think? The Master, I think.
Okay.
I think The Master, that one, that director I don't like movies.
PTA.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're getting way ahead of ourselves with this.
But we are going to lead into the odds-on favorite, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
For best actress is.
Well, we are going to lead to that, but I just want to put a button on the Joker thing. Mm-hmm. Just tell people about the movie since we started talking about the Aurora aspect of it. It's set in Gotham City, basically in the 1970s. but it's really about the United States now. And it's a vision of the United States. It's not exactly accurate, but it's a vision of fantasy in terms of our paranoia. So it's a, I think, in a way, I think it's kind of culturally, sociologically irresponsible too, in the way that it depicts the United States. It's like everybody is rich, is exploiting everybody poor, and there's going to be a revolution and all this. I mean, this is like, you know, it's just this ugly vision of the country and an ugly vision of the city. But, and it's even, you know, it's even not particularly nice to mentally ill people in a way, because, you know, they did this study and they said that that mentally ill people, like really people who are really pretty mentally ill, are about as violent as the general population, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And though they are more likely to become victims of violence than people in the general population. I mean, look, you wind up offending anybody if you do make any kind of story. But I'm just saying it's just part of the general tenor of this movie. If movies could be citizens, this would be like a bad citizen. You know, I mean, it may incite violence. It presents a kind of paranoid vision that kind of feeds whatever the paranoia is out there. And it's not even nice to people who are kind of crazy. All the same, I think it's a good movie, so, you know, you might want to check it out when it's on video. I would not go to the movies to see this. I mean, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I might affect your box office.
This is like, and you know I like that genre, not that genre specific, but this one, just watching The Coming Attraction, I'm going to have to see it.
Yeah.
For critics voting, but boy, I also don't want to see it.
I mean, yeah, in a theater.
In a theater, yeah. I mean, I don't want to see it in a theater. I know I'm going to be seeing Academy screenings, but
oh, that'll be fun. No, you watch that, you know. But I just wonder if this might affect some people. Well, then, you know, might make feeling like you're doing something dangerous that's not very dangerous, may actually be fun for people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it always is a little bit fun to do something that you feel like it's dangerous, but you know it's probably not really. That's how I feel about flying. I'm always nervous on a plane, but I'm kind of excited by it because I'm not really worried about it.
I'm glad you're excited about it because I'm not. I'm like, in takeoff, it's, you don't even bother talking to me.
Well, yeah.
Don't even think about it.
Do the count to 1,000.
You count. I do one Mississippi, two Mississippi, to like 120.
No, go over to 1,000. By the time you hear the
famous ding.
The ding is a good one.
The ding is a good one. Then the flight attendants get up and you go, oh, my goodness.
I feel that way, too.
That was definitely...
Yeah, the ding is good.
Goodness.
I love
the ding.
The ding is good. The ding. We like the ding. Okay, now ask me about the thing you wanted to ask me about.
I forgot what it was. Well, we were talking about the men. Now we're getting to the women. And whether I like it or not, or whether you like it or not, the odds on favor is going to be a big comeback for Renee Zellweger playing Judy Garland.
Yes, this is also, you know, my review of this is doing very, very well, very well online, right next to my Darkest Minds review, which is still doing well. You know, believe it or not, Darkest Minds is like amazing.
When was that movie?
It was last year. I gave it a perfunctory bad review.
That's right.
It got 18,000 hits in the last month. I don't understand.
I remember that.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know what site it's on. I don't know. There's something about Darkest Minds.
Maybe Drudge.
I don't know. But I want to find out like who adopted Darkest Minds and just beg them to put all my articles on whatever site it's on, because it's really crazy.
I remember that too. I remember because I was still, still working there. And I remember going, Darkest Minds is like, just keep tweeting that thing out.
It hasn't stopped. It has not stopped. Anyway, Judy. Judy, I don't know. Okay. I don't know if I think Renee Zellweger was really good in her performance because she was really, really good in her performance, or because it's just that when she stopped singing, the pain stopped. And I was so grateful that she stopped singing that I was willing to say, wow, she's great in this movie. I really don't know. But I decided that she was good, because that's what we do around here. We have to actually decide things, even when we're not so sure, because it's like, okay, I guess I think this. I'm not so sure how good she is. It's one of those chameleonic things. What do you think, Lee?
I had three things to say.
You saw it.
I saw the movie. When she sings, and Wag said to me, and after he said it, I said, hey, I think you got something there. Wag said he thought he was watching an SNL skit. And remember, this was based on...
You were the first person outside of England to call anybody a wag.
A wag. Okay.
A wag.
A wag.
That's like
a great word.
It's a witty person. A witty person who says something droll.
Right. Exactly. A wag.
A wag.
A wag.
All right.
Remember, this was a Broadway show that got bad reviews, except for the actress who played Judy, who either was nominated or won the Tony. Definitely won the Olivier Award. But the show itself got slammed, and this is what it's based on.
Okay.
Two is, there are times when I do think she's brilliant, and there's times I say I'm looking at Renee Zellweger. Now, this is an unfair comparison, maybe, maybe not, but the same year on television, I saw one of the most transforming performances of all time in Fosse Verdon, where Michelle Williams just was absolutely incredible. So you're comparing an actress who played another actress versus an actress playing another actress, and Renee Zellweger doesn't hold a torch to Williams.
Okay. In defense of Renee Zellweger.
Right.
Michelle Williams still looked like Michelle Williams. The difference is that we don't know Gwen Verdon as well as we know Judy Garland. Judy Garland is like amazingly indelible. Gwen Verdon is sort of,
disagree. When
really?
I looked at her, and in fact, there's even a Facebook thing when she's doing that scene from Damn Yankees side by side, you can't tell the difference.
Well, no, she's great.
I mean, I really felt that I looked at her, I did not know that was, I mean, if I didn't know that was Michelle Williams, I would just say, Gwen Verdon's playing herself in this movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, if everybody who makes a movie has to get compared to Michelle Williams, then
I don't know if that's fair enough, but it's the same year, so unfortunately.
Yeah. It's about her late in life. I've had people write to me say that I completely missed the point, that she's supposed to sound bad. But you saw the movie. Are they trying to make it like Renee Zellweger is bad? Is she like going up there trying to sound bad as Judy Garland, or is she just trying to survive?
I didn't even mind the singing. It was just, I felt there was some exaggeration that shouldn't have been there. And also that ending, it was so silly.
Well, the ending,
ending at the show.
Oh, with the Somewhere Over the Rainbow?
I don't want to give away the spoiler, but it's where she befriends these two strangers who are very sweet men.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That never happened.
Never happened.
Never happened.
And people are going, did that happen? Never happened.
Never happened. Yeah. That never happened. Well, good to know. I figured that didn't happen. Do you know for sure it didn't happen?
No, not 100%, but it never happened.
It never happened. I know. I feel the same way.
And it was just sort of the whole thing. You were like going, no.
I like Renee Zellweger. I think she's a terrific actress, but she'd have to sound good as Judy Garland to sound bad as Judy Garland, if you know what I mean. I mean, Judy Garland, even if you say, oh, well, it doesn't matter that she doesn't sound as good as Judy Garland, neither did Judy Garland, but Judy Garland sounded like a bombed magnificent city, and Renee Zellweger sounds like a perfectly acceptable dingy small town. You know what I mean? It's completely different. It's a different quality.
And I said at times I would sit there and I didn't see Judy at all. I saw Renee, and that bothered me a lot.
That doesn't bother me that much.
I mean, it was a lot. Very often I would go, I mean, even her eyes changed. I go, at least get the eyes right.
I just say, fine. It's too much to expect us to believe that Renee Zellweger is Judy Garland. But 15 minutes into the movie, it should be very possible to believe that Judy Garland has turned into Renee Zellweger. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that happens in a movie. But the problem is that just when you're saying, okay, yeah, Judy Garland is now Renee Zellweger, oh, she sings like Renee Zellweger, and then you're gone. Then it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Because everybody's going crazy about her, and you just don't believe this person did the singing. That's just the way it is.
I mean, I feel for her, because I agree with you. I've always liked her as an actress.
Great.
And I thought that, you know, her career, you know, unfortunately hit a dead spot. I don't know the exact reasons why.
40s?
I guess. The only other actress I can see right now, and the movie's getting so reviews, is Carmen, what's her name, Erivo, the actress, the Broadway actress Erivo. She's playing Harriet Tubman.
Oh, yeah,
but
that's
I hear the movie is, somebody said the movie is very, very, It's very basic.
Do you want to see it?
Oh yeah.
It's tomorrow.
I can't go tomorrow, but okay. I can go. I have another one I'm going to.
Maybe I won't see it tomorrow either.
Okay, then you can be. What's her name? Arrivo. I can't think of her first name. Very good. She's won the Tony.
Yeah, I've seen her.
But she's supposedly really good, but sometimes when you're really good at a bad movie or a mediocre movie, like Glenn Close in The Wife, as we all know, that can damage your chances.
Yeah, yeah.
And this movie's actually getting rave reviews, and I don't know why. The actual movie, Judy.
Yeah. It's also doing well.
It is doing well. Yes, it's doing extremely well.
Yeah, which is also a surprise. What other movies do we have there, Lee?
Well, I've seen a couple of documentaries I really like. One is about Linda Ronstadt, In Her Own Words, which is absolutely terrific. As a matter of fact, I'm going to just drop this name, but our former editor, Meredith White, the beloved Meredith White, just texted me and emailed me and said how much she loved it. And I've seen it, so we cannot deny Meredith White's taste. And then I saw this movie called It's Fiddler, Miracle of Miracles. It's a documentary about the origins and the making of the musical Fiddler on the Roof. And they should show this in every classroom that's dealing with musical theater. It's absolutely
Sounds
tremendous.
Good.
This, it's just from the beginning to the end, things you didn't know, things you didn't learn. And it opened in Detroit. They hated it. And there were songs they were dropping. Jerome Robbins, of course, was horrible to work with.
Yeah.
And he made them do things. And I mean, it, of course, it opened on Broadway. It was like, what happened? This is one of the greatest musicals of all time.
Yeah.
And the background of it, too. What brought this musical to life was just absolutely... Going all the way back to the Shalom Aleichem days, they didn't deal with Zero Mostel as much as I would have liked, because there's wonderful anecdotes I've heard about him. But other than that, I just thought it was a tremendous documentary.
Well, that's great. And what other movies do you have over there on that list of movies that have come out?
Well, that's not just may give Judy Renee a run for her money.
Oh, what's that?
The lady from Twilight.
Oh. Oh, that's
Kristen
possible.
Stewart.
Yeah, that might happen. That might happen. The movie is not great. It's just good. We're talking about Seberg. Yeah.
And you want to tell everybody who Seberg is?
Yeah, it's not opening yet.
No, it hasn't opened yet.
Yeah, but just because I saw it in Venice. Right. Yeah. We'll talk about this, later on. But it's Seberg. It's about Jean Seberg, the actress who was in Breathless, is mostly known for that, and some other French movies, but also... some American movies, and it's really about how she got involved in politics, and the FBI just wrecked her life. And eventually she ended up dead when she was like 40 years old, mm-hmm. under peculiar circumstances that might have been suicide.
She played Joan of Arc, didn't she?
She played Joan of Arc, and she had like third degree burns because of Otto Preminger, the director, chose to literally burn her at the stake, and the fire got out of control. Yeah. It's really crazy. Yeah, so what other...
We have this movie, Lucy in the Sky. I had a question.
Lucy in the Sky.
You didn't know the incident. Is this the one where the woman, the astronaut female, is driving in the car for like 12 hours? With the diaper.
Okay, it's based on that incident.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the story of Lisa Novak or Nowak. She was a NASA astronaut, and within a year of her going on, I guess, a space shuttle flight, she got in trouble. The diaper thing she denies. It seems like that's like a may have been an urban legend, but she definitely attacked her ex-boyfriend's fiance in an airport, and this movie is sort of based on that, but everything's changed, including the name. Her name is Lucy. She has a different last name. All the circumstances are different. It takes place not like 8 months after the flight, but like maybe a month after the flight. So it's like basically the movie's trying to come up with a kind of a philosophical, airy notion that just being out in space and confronting the great emptiness and the great beyond has done something to her mind, has provoked a kind of metaphysical crisis that has resulted in this kind of insane behavior. And it stars Natalie Portman, who's always fun, and she's very good in the beginning of the movie as a hard-driving, very career-oriented can-do sort of person. And then she's very good towards the end of the movie as somebody who's cracking up, who's going nuts, who's become sexually obsessed and obsessed in every possible way. She's very good there, too. But you don't see how those are the same person. You don't see how they're the same person at all. It's sort of like the problem with Godfather 2 and Godfather 3, only it's in one movie. You know, Pacino's totally good as Michael Corleone in one, and he's totally good as Michael Corleone in the other, but the problem is those are completely different guys. There's no way that's the same guy. And same thing with Natalie Portman in this movie. And plus, it's boring, so I wouldn't see it.
It's interesting you bring that up, because Ad Astra deals with the same thing about how space can mess around with your mind.
It's a James Gray movie. That's
yeah, it's beautiful to look at. Absolutely gorgeous. The storyline is, this is again where Brad Pitt is not playing white trash, and as a result, you like want to like the story's not very good. But the part with Tommy Lee Jones and the part with Donald Sutherland is very good.
You know, it's funny. That reminds me, because when I was in Venice, and the way people talk in Europe, James Gray is known as, like, in Europe, as one of the best directors in the United States. Like, when people talk about, like, I was talking to Vincent Lindon or Vincent Landon, and he was, like, telling me, I don't really want to work in America, but if, you know, one day the phone rang and it was, and you figure he's going to say Martin Scorsese, but he says, and it's James Gray, and he wants to make a movie. And for a second, I was saying, like, who's James Gray? But that kind of thing that he said, I heard, like, three other people in France and Italy say that for some reason they think he's the best director in the United States, or at least, you know, right up there with the very best. And then we got a couple more.
You have Laundromat?
Laundromat, yeah, that opens this week. That's a Steven Soderbergh movie about a money, kind of a money laundering law firm based in Panama, but it's about all the horrible things that happen as a result, like, you know, like you get insurance from a company and then the company is sold to another company and the company is sold to another company and then you need to collect on the insurance and you have no insurance. And not only that, but nobody's responsible. The movie is done, it's kind of done in the style of The Big Short, and it doesn't work. For about 20 minutes, you think it does work and it's going to be fun, and but it's not. It's just, it's fun in patches. It's narrated by the two kind of unscrupulous lawyers, who in this case are played by Gary Oldman and Antonio Banderas, and they are amusing, but eventually you begin to realize, and they step out of the movie to try to explain the different financial things, kind of like, you know, explaining it to the audience the way they did in The Big Short, but in this case you don't understand anything they're talking about. You have no idea what they're talking about, and not only that, but you get a distinct feeling that they don't either. That the actors don't either. Meryl Streep is in it, kind of playing a fussy American Midwestern woman, and it almost seems like a condescending portrayal. Not bad, but she has a double role. I'll let you discover. You see the movie, it's kind of fun to realize, hold it, that's Meryl Streep. I realized it right away. There was like about 2 minutes in. I didn't realize it right away. I realized it 2 minutes in. But there were people that at the end of the movie, she does a big reveal. She takes off her wig. She takes off her glasses, does this whole thing. And the whole audience starts laughing. And, you know, but I caught it. Of course, you would have caught it in the first five seconds because you're kind of amazing. Yeah.
Okay, this The Death of Somebody?
The Death of Dick Long.
Dick Long.
Yeah.
It looked like Rich Levy, who I actually know of Rich Levy.
But. Yeah, I thought it was going to be The Death of, it was The Death of Dick Long. I thought it was going to be a movie about the untimely death of Richard Long, the guy who was on, I think, Nanny and the Professor. I thought it would be a nice documentary. But actually, it's a movie that starts off as a kind of a redneck farce about guys trying to cover up a crime, and they are the stupidest people in the world. I mean, if they were any stupider, they'd be on like CNN waving their cell phone. You know, I mean, these guys are like suicidal in terms of their self-preservation instinct. And so it's a nice farce. And then all of a sudden, I don't know what got into somebody's mind, but it becomes a drama. It becomes a drama. I don't know whose fault it is. I don't know if it's the writer just tanked his own movie, or it could be the director tanked the screenwriter's movie because it's directed by the guy who directed Swiss Army Man, which was one of absolutely the worst movies of 2016. Did you see that, Swiss Army Man? Did you like it,
no.
Peter? No, it was just awful.
What was that?
It was about a, it was it was uh, it was uh, It was about a guy talking to a decomposed corpse the whole time.
Oh yeah, I remember that. He was decomposing. I think you remember the review.
Yeah,
Oh goodness.
Yeah, it was the guy from Harry Potter, and
that's
the other
one
guy
didn't have to watch. Yeah. I did see parts of. Take it back. I did.
Yeah, and Paul Dano and the young man
from
Harry Potter.
Yeah, but definitely, I definitely remember what's his name, Daniel Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh
that's
wow.
It. Yeah, that was bad. The way, that reminds me. Speaking of decomposing, did you see that horrible movie that was at the Jewish Film Festival?
No. I know which one. Last year, not this year.
Yeah, last year.
One with The Matthew Broderick?
Yeah, Matthew Broderick.
And the guy who was in Son of Saul?
Yeah, the guy from Son of Saul.
I hated that movie.
Oh, it's garbage. I can't believe it. I can't believe they programmed it.
But it got good reviews.
Crazy.
I hated that movie.
That was a disgusting movie. It was all about decomposition, the whole movie. And not only that, but it made no sense in terms of character. It was pure, unbelievable
garbage. If you know the Jewish religion, it made some sense about the burial part. But as I said, it was just watching. It was like, why?
Why would Matthew Broderick do it? Anyway, it's just terrible. Yeah. But yeah, that's... Yeah.
And then another movie called Let's Do Something with Mrs. Let's...
Oh, that's Let's Lead with This. That's, in other words, it's telling you, ask me about that first.
Oh, I see. Never mind.
Yes.
So we didn't as a result.
Yeah. No, well, we did sort of. I said, let's leave with the Joker. So we sort of led with Joker. Anyway, we're back.
We're back.
Leba, so you were in New York?
I was in New York, and actually I was in Normandy and London.
Normandy.
Before that.
Oh, very nice.
We didn't overlap. So I went first, and Mick went second.
Yeah.
So I was in Normandy and London. And then I just came back from New York and Michigan.
Nice being retired?
Oh, absolutely.
That's great. I was, I had
Except for the fact I'm getting all of these calls from Medicare people wanting to get my business, and I'm already taken care of. I already took care of the Medicare.
Yeah.
And it's like I have to turn my phones off. At one point, I had five in a row.
I don't get those phone calls, but I guess
yet.
I will in a few years. The phone calls I get is the phone call I get. I get this three times a day. Hi. We're doing a painting for Mrs. Davis right down the road. And since we're in the neighborhood, we'd like to give you an estimate on something. But everybody's doing work for Mrs. Davis, so I don't think she exists. Anyway.
Oh, I get them all. I get the carpet cleaners. Oh, I get the air duct cleaners.
I get the air duct thing. But how about the people who want to sell you an oil well?
I haven't gotten that, but I've gotten the fact that my computer, and then you tell them I know you're a scam, and they like actually curse at you and hang up the phone.
I'm on some kind of crazy phone list for wealthy investors. I don't know how I got on this thing, but it wasn't in the usual way, obviously. And they call me up and they say, do I want to buy a diamond mine? Do I want to buy an oil well? Do I want to invest in this stuff? And I just say to them, it's like, this is hopeless.
You know what just happened is, and I'm not going to say which party, one of the parties that I'm in favor of keeps sending me messages about donating money now or answering a survey or whichever. Yeah. I did that 4 years ago and discovered it's the stupidest thing you could ever do because they just bombard you with emails.
Oh, if you give them money?
No, not even give them money. If you just respond to any of their emails, they fill out the survey or just say, yes, I believe in your cause.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're now coming in like an overdrive. And it's like,
you're getting phone calls for different political candidates?
I'm mostly getting from one. Yeah. Very famous candidate who I think is representing the party that we're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I'm getting two now. It's been added on. I got another one from a different one.
Okay. Well, I haven't gotten any. I haven't gotten any of the political ones.
Because I think I don't know why, but I think someone asked you what's your party affiliation. Don't ever answer that question.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, Leba. Thank you very much, and I guess that's about it. We'll come back in a couple of weeks, and we'll talk about some more of these things. We have, I'll just tell you, preview of coming attractions, The Lighthouse. Oh, boy, is that bad.
No.
Ooh, is that rough. Anyway, but that's it for now. So anyway, do you want to say goodbye, Leba?
I'm going to say goodbye, and just remember to tune in next week or 3 weeks or 4 months from now for...
another wonderful episode of Movies with Mick LaSalle. I'm Mick LaSalle. See you later.
You are listening to the San Francisco Chronicle. Thanks to Mick LaSalle and Leba Hertz. Our producer today is me, Peter Hartlob. Supervising producers are King Kaufman and Libby Coleman. Executive producer is Tim O'Rourke, and our editor-in-chief is Audrey Cooper. Our music is Midnight Special by Ease Jammy Jams. Read our columns and subscribe to The Chronicle at www.sfchronicle.com. Chronicle podcasts are on Apple Podcasts and other streaming services. Listen at www.sfchronicle.com/podcasts with an S.